It's time for Surf and Turf on Main Street. Alternating Thursdays at this time, we get reports from our oceans guy, Boris Worm, and about the rest of the Wild Kingdom from Andrew Hebda at the Museum of Natural History. This week, ocean scientists lose an eye in the sky.
Under the sea, darling, it's better down where it's wet, and take it from me. Up on the shore, they work all day, out in the sun, they slave away. While we're devoting full time to floating under the sea.
Marine scientists have a number of ways of observing the oceans, using research vessels, scuba diving and submarines, and taking samples from shore. They also look at the oceans from space. Over the past 20 years, a number of satellites that orbit the Earth have been equipped with sensors that provide scientists with daily updates. Now, unfortunately, one of these satellites, operated by NASA, has died. Scientists around the world are in a state of worry over this. Boris Worm studies the oceans at Dalhousie University. Boris, welcome back to Main Street.
Hi, Bill.
What was this satellite called, and what kinds of things did it observe?
It's called the SeaStar satellite, and it had a sensor on it, an optical sensor called the SeaWIFF sensor. So this is a satellite, a small one, about the size of a fridge, orbiting the Earth at about 700 kilometers. And the new thing about it was when it was launched in 1997 that it could observe the whole global ocean, the whole bit, every 3 days and give us a real-time image of how ocean color was developing, and from this we could calculate how productive the ocean was in different parts of the world at a very fine resolution, so a few kilometer of resolution. So it provided this real-time glimpse of the global ocean, almost like taking the vital signs of the ocean like a doctor would be, and the productivity, obviously, along with the temperature, is one of the most important vital signs.
What were some of the most important discoveries that came about with the help of SeaStar?
SeaStar gave this global image of plant life in the oceans and showed us that some regions, such as the one we're living in, Nova Scotia and the North Atlantic in general, is very rich in plant life called phytoplankton, very productive. And that supports, for example, great fisheries. And then there's other parts, such as the central basins of the North and South Pacific and the North and South Atlantic, that are much, much less productive. They're more like ocean deserts. Also, we saw how productivity of the ocean is changing over time. For example, the impact of climate warming on phytoplankton was discovered on this large scale, such that a warming ocean is becoming less and less productive. And then finally, we've been able to track the impact of climate phenomena like El Nino, for example, in the Southern Pacific, on ocean life and how that's changing over time too.
Did you use data from this satellite in your own research?
Well, I think almost any marine scientist, certainly any oceanographer, will have at least looked at it. And yes, I have used it in a number of publications. For example, I was on a cruise through the Pacific 2 years ago. We were cruising from Hawaii down towards Tahiti. And we were sampling the ocean every few kilometers for plant life, but we were also taking tows of zooplankton and observing fishes and seabirds and other creatures. And at the same time, we were downloading these real-time images from the satellite onto the ship via satellite link and basically getting the bigger picture of how our little cruise track and our observations integrated with larger oceanographic features. It was like having a big brother, like a good friend in the sky, who gives you the bigger context of where you are. And it's incredibly important. This was possibly the most important mission NASA ever did in terms of scientific output. Few people in the public know about it. It was a low-profile mission, but scientifically incredibly important.
Well, how did it get started? How did they decide that they were going to use satellites for oceans research?
So I thought this was an interesting piece of history. The idea came from scientists. It didn't, for this particular sensor, it didn't come from NASA itself, which is largely space engineers. And the scientists really wanted this ability to track the vital signs of the global ocean, and particularly ocean color, from which you can devise, you know, the biology of the ocean, how that's changing and developing. And so it was a bottom-up effort, and it was not driven by NASA. And they didn't like that, so they kind of fought it all along the way. NASA wanted something fancier. This was a very low-cost mission. The total cost was $45 million, which is absolutely nothing in terms of space research. The annual cost overrun of a lot of missions is in that order, and this was the total cost for all 13 years the satellite has been working and producing data. And so it was done in part by a number of private companies that then, under the auspices of NASA, got a very low-cost vehicle to put it into space called a Pegasus rocket that is bolted underneath an aircraft, so nothing like space shuttle or so. Very simple device that then shoots it into the lower orbit, and from that the satellite kind of made its way by itself up to the upper orbit where it was parked, and then it produced data for 13 years. The amazing thing was it was only projected to live for a maximum of 5 years, but it proved to be such a sturdy little thing that it just made it for much, much longer than anyone have thought, in producing the longest and most detailed time series in marine science that we know of.
You said it went up in 1997?
Yes.
So 14 years. What happened to the satellite? Why is SeaStar satellite not working anymore?
Well, we don't quite know, but I learned of this from a posting on the Ocean Color website, which, you know, reads more like an obituary. It starts in saying, you know, "I'm very sorry to have to report the news that after nearly 2 months of intensive research and numerous attempts at communication, we have determined that the SeaRIFS mission is no longer recoverable." And then it goes on to talk about, you know, "We could have not asked for a more tenacious little spacecraft, a wonderful little instrument," you know, and then it ends in saying, "Thanks to everyone for the incredible support over the years. This was a real team effort, and I have no doubt that this data set will continue to provide new discoveries and insights into the workings of this incredible planet we call home." I just find that quite moving. You know, this is a piece of machinery, but I think it's fair to say people have fallen a bit in love with it.
A little bit. Yeah. Do scientists have the same level of affection for, say, their microscopes?
Maybe. It depends. You know, it depends on what it makes you able to do. And this particular instrument, the SeaRIFS sensor, has just enabled the scientific community, I think it's fair to say, to revolutionize our way we view the ocean. And I talked to Marlon Lewis yesterday, who's at Dalhousie Oceanography, who was involved in developing this sensor. And he said, you know, it was like the Ford truck of the satellites. It was simple, it was dependable, it was, you know, on a shoestring budget. And it worked beautifully, much longer than anyone have thought. And people just love this little thing. And now, you know, the question is what comes next?
Yeah, exactly. The thing is gone now. What's next? Can we still collect that data on the oceans without the satellite?
Well, we do need the satellite. There's no question about it. I mean, this is a huge loss. There's another satellite that NASA operates called MODIS, another sensor that can see ocean color. There's a European one and a Chinese one as well. They're not quite as dependable, though, and they haven't been running for nearly as long. And then there's a question of how comparable the data are. So it is a big loss, but they're thinking about a replacement. But it takes so long to prepare these things, the launch maybe in 2020 or later. So we're really worried about a potential data gap if those other satellites come towards the end of their life. And it's just so important to be able to track the ocean from space and to provide these images that, you know, I think it should be a real priority. But nobody at NASA wants the Ford truck anymore. They all want something fancier and more advanced and more complicated. But as Marlon said yesterday, why not stick with what has served us so well over the past 13 years?
All right, well, what does this mean for ongoing research, like the study that you told us about last year from your colleagues at Dell on the decline of phytoplankton?
Well, it means that now we have to rely on these other satellites and shorter time series and then compare those with the SeaRIFS data and try to get a synthetic time series, which is not an easy feat. But, you know, people are working on this, trying to make sure that we're not losing the ability to track changes in phytoplankton as they're unfolding around the global ocean.
Boris, thanks for this.
Well, thank you.
That's Boris Warm. He is our oceans guy here on Main Street. Next week on Surf and Turf Talk, Andrew Hebda from the Nova Scotia Museum of Natural History will be here.